PO Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God loves you, and he wants you to come clean before
him. You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and the views of our guest, who is Neil McCluskey, is with the Cato Institute, has written a fascinating book called Feds in the Classroom. And it deals with the fact that the federal government, in certainly violation of our Constitution, has more or less taken over control of educational sending standards, and whether it be the outcome-based education and No Child Left Behind program, federal interference with education, well, is it helping or is it hindering? Mr. McCluskey, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
So why don't you pick up the story and tell us why you wrote the book and why this is such an important issue to everyone out there listening to the program.
Sure. I wrote the book, actually. I guess the genesis of it was about 3 years ago. One of the bosses at the Cato Institute wanted to know, well, where does all the federal education money go? I mean, where's all the billions of dollars? What's it being used for? And so I wrote a little report on where the money went. And in that, I decided, well, I ought to look at the history of federal involvement and where the money was supposed to go, what it was supposed to do. And so I wrote a little history and tracked where the money went and just gave a basic assessment of, you know, what have we gotten for the money. And then someone at Roman Littlefield that published my book, he saw the report and said, well, this would be something maybe you should expand on, go into more of the history, the role of the federal courts, things like that. So that's what I did in the book. I lay out a few chapters there in the history of not just federal involvement, but even of public education in general, so that people got the understanding that public education the way we have it now, which is sort of government, everyone pays taxes for government-controlled schools, it really started off as school choice, and then only over really decades and decades did it become this centrally controlled system where parents had no power. And then if you look at how we've done since the federal government has gotten involved and there's been more centralized control, you'll see that the test scores have not gone up. They've been pretty much stagnant, but spending's gone way up, so we haven't really gotten anything for all that federal involvement.
Well, of course, but what about the real quality of our educational system? Because you can do whatever you want to by the tests. You could actually dumb down the tests so the people look like they're doing better, and yet they really are not learning the fundamentals of education. How do our children stack up with children from other countries by the time they graduate from high school?
Well, we do pretty poorly. There's several assessments, typically our students against students from economically similar countries, although you're usually talking about 40 countries, so obviously there's a big difference still within that group. And, you know, in fourth grade we tend to do well. In eighth grade, we've moved down toward the middle of the group, and by the time we're looking at high school kids, we're in the bottom. So the longer kids stay in our school system, the worse they end up doing compared to their peers elsewhere.
And I think that's a pretty poor commentary. How can we, be a successful nation when our children, when the time they graduate from high school, can't compare with children from many other nations? Some of them really almost, well, are pretty low down on the economic scale, but their kids are getting a better education. And the question is, why? And we're going to explore that with Mr. Neil McCluskey right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Neil, why do you think our children are doing so poorly by the time that they graduate from high school when they're tested in comparison with, with children from other countries?
Well, one of the biggest problems, I mean, there are a lot of contributing factors, but one of the biggest problems is actually, and people are surprised to hear this, if you look at most of the countries that we're competing with, one of the things they have that we don't is most of them have a fair amount of school choice. You can choose, most parents can choose to go to a traditional public school, a religious school, and they do it without penalty because essentially the money that is spent for education follows the child to whatever school they want. So what these other countries have that we don't have that surprises people, because you're talking about, for instance, Norway and Sweden, Scandinavian countries we think of typically as being very socialized, having more school choice, they actually have more competition among providers of education, which requires those schools to be innovative and to compete to provide a good product, or of course parents will take their money elsewhere. And so really one of the biggest things we're missing that our competitors have, which is shocking considering how free market we generally are, is we don't have a free market in education, all the competition and innovation that goes with that, and other countries do.
Well, of course, we're told, though, that the federal government is going to find out who the good teachers are and who the bad teachers are, and if the student doesn't do well on the test, then the school and, of course, even secondarily, the teacher is going to be penalized so that they're being forced to do a better job. We're bringing competition into education. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, if you look at what's really the dominant force in public education now, which is the No Child Left Behind Act, which is the most intrusive federal education law ever passed, it does lay out the promise. It offers the promise to parents that if your child is in a school that's performing poorly, you will get school choice. Well, the school choice is one of the many sort of shams that is associated with No Child Left Behind. So they tell parents they'll get school choice if their kids are in a poorly performing school, but states have really gamed the entire system by setting very low standards so it's easy for all kids to hit proficiency targets. So many schools that are not doing a good job don't get labeled as failing to begin with. But even after they are, the only schools you're allowed to pick from are schools within your district. So if you're in a bad district, if you're in, many of our inner cities, Detroit, Chicago,
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was asking Mr. McCluskey about this idea that, certainly they're bringing competition into the schools through No Child Left Behind, and certainly then if the child or if the school is doing poorly, then of course the parents are given a choice of changing schools. But you want to develop that idea?
Yeah. They are, if they're in a family school, they supposedly have a choice. But the choice is limited under the law to other schools, non-failing schools, only within the same district that the school they're in right now is located. So kids in really bad districts get pretty much no choice at all. So most of the inner cities like Chicago, Detroit, or New York, or Los Angeles, or all these places that have so many awful schools, they're often told, well, you get maybe one or two choices, and usually they're schools that aren't very much better than the schools they're in right now. And in some places, like Chicago, they pretty much said, school choice is meaningless here because we just don't have enough schools that aren't failing. And so until you give parents the option right off the bat to send their kids to any school, including private schools, there isn't really competition because if you force them to only pick within the district, you're pretty much saying you get one Soviet car or another Soviet car. Same manufacturer, just two doors or four doors.
But if we really give parents the freedom of choice, why, that really wouldn't be fair, because then some kids would get a better education than others, and after all, that really isn't fair, is it?
Well, that's sort of the great myth. I mean, yes, it's true that insofar as all people are different, you'll have differences in education. But for one thing, what that does is they say they make the perfect the enemy of the good. And then it ignores the fact that right now people get hugely different educations, and it's based on where you live. So if you're wealthy enough to move to a nice suburb with pretty good schools, your kids will get a decent education. But if you're poor and you live in an inner city district, you're out of luck. And so it would be much more fair and much easier for poor people to get an equal education if you just gave everyone the money set aside for their education, because the rich people can already choose, and what you're doing is then giving poorer people the chance to do the same thing. Find a school that works.
Well, Chris, I couldn't help but notice in your book you talked about how the African children, the whole idea of education seems to be to keep them down on the plantation, not to give them a good education.
Right. It wasn't just African Americans. I mean, this is sort of how the education establishment for many decades dealt with poor people and immigrants too, which is, they said, usually these were kind of progressive elites would say, well, I mean, let's be honest, most of these people are going to either end up, in the case of immigrants and kids in urban districts, they're going to end up working in factories. So all we should give them in school is preparation to work in a factory. And for African Americans, they said, well, we know these people are going to just end up on plantations, so let's just teach them what they need to know to work on a plantation. And of course, that's not what many parents wanted. That's not what many people wanted. They wanted what education is supposed to provide, which is upward mobility. And so what people did, these elites, sometimes even well-intentioned, is they essentially condemned the poor to remain poor, and they condemned African Americans to remain on the plantations they so desperately wanted to get away from.
Yeah, of course, your point really was the fact that many of the black parents want school choice. They want their children to have a better opportunity. And, of course, we've trapped them in a system regulated from Washington, D.C., that's going to give them the same sort of education they'd get if they were in Washington, D.C. itself, which is, of course, a federally controlled educational system, with one of the poorest schools in the nation and the murder capital of the world. These kids really don't stand much of a chance, do they?
No, not really. I mean, so long as parents, the people who care about their kids most are given absolutely no power, which is what happens when they don't have choice, when tax dollars go right to the monopoly government system, until they have no power, they're never going to be able to get the education that they need to really succeed in life. Because the schools don't work for them. If they can't go anywhere, the schools end up working for, the massive number of very highly paid administrators, for instance, that work in Washington, D.C., and schools just become a jobs program and not an educational institution.
Well, you seem to point out the fact that the purpose of education seems to have changed a lot. It's no longer necessary to impart information. It's to mold the child to be a part of society.
Yeah, that's. It goes back to, again, if you look at the progressive era, so you can go all the way back to the end of the 19th century, much of the 20th century. People who ran the schools, ran the education schools and were getting the education doctorates and teaching the teachers and things like that, really believed that schools should be used for social change. And typically that social change was toward the socialist end, and it was to sort of try and build a utopia. And it wasn't about allowing the people who were getting the education, the parents of the kids who were getting the education, to decide what they wanted and to make what's best for their lives. It was more a form of social control and social engineering.
And, of course, what this really means is that The children are not stressing what they need to be competitive in the world, reading and writing and arithmetic, but this was to change their attitude towards God and family and country and really to, just to modify, you know, their basic standards of belief and morals and you know, as I look and see, you know, the instance of drug use and illegitimacy and moral depravity among our youth, I wonder if our education system is failing or if it's succeeding. Somebody has a different worldview for our children.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely failing in its educational mission. And you know, even a lot of the people a lot of these progressives and liberals who control the schools, even they lament the fact, they say, well, you know, none of our kids participate in democracy and they're not socially engaged and things like that, which is what they were trying to do. But the fact of the matter is that public schools are now so devoid of any kind of content or even any kind of controlling idea, because we're all diverse people and everyone does have input in the schools, that they end up not only not learning anything academically, but they don't leave with any kind of morals or anything like that, because to really impart moral values, you have to get people who generally agree on them in the schools, and schools that are very open about teaching those things. In other words, bringing people, parents who want their kids to learn certain values, together with schools that teach them, if you want values to be learned. But if you leave it up to some majority rules political system, the best you're going to get is watered down, milquetoast kind of meaningless values.
And certainly, you know, I've talked to college professors who told me that, you know, the students they're getting today are not the students they got 30 years ago, 20 years ago. Their ability to think, to concentrate, to perform, their ability to learn is much less than it was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've also, you know, as part of sort of the self-esteem movement and fuzzy math and even whole language and all sorts of other progressive ideas that have come through the schools, we kind of eliminated this notion that learning requires hard work, nose to the grindstone, things like that, and that if it doesn't come easily or if it's not fun or something like, you know, that you can't miracle the knowledge into a child's head, that it's not worth doing. So kids don't come to school with the understanding that they are there to work hard, and it's not always going to be fun, but what is of primary importance is that they learn.
And, of course, they're just not learning. Well, what impact has the federal interference had? You know, because certainly when I went to school, federal government had absolutely nothing to do with education. It really wasn't until the Sputnik when, of course, the President Eisenhower closed down our effort to put a man into space, that, you know, and then the Russians got the first man into space. They suddenly said, oh, look, the Russians are ahead of us. My goodness, we're going to have to start giving massive amounts of federal money to the libraries so that if we have better libraries, our kids will learn more. And then the next thing we knew, step by step, little by little, suddenly the federal government was into every aspect of education, always trying to compete with those wicked communists because they got ahead of us. They got a man into space first, and I've often wondered how that really happened. But that was used as a justification for something that really isn't constitutional, is it? And if it isn't constitutional, isn't it illegal?
Well, absolutely. The Constitution is what gives the federal government the only powers it can legitimately exercise. And if you look at you read the Constitution, you look at the list of specific enumerated powers federal government has, you won't see the word education, the word schooling, or any word like that in that list. What people then say is, well, but remember, it says that the Constitution's there to, so the federal government can promote the general welfare. Except Madison himself, in the Federalist paper, addressed that directly and said all the general welfare clause does is introduce the very specific list of enumerated powers that follow it and explain why those powers are there. In other words, they can coin money and regulate interstate commerce to promote the general welfare. And he says, in fact, that if the general welfare clause itself were supposed to convey power to the federal government, there wouldn't have been any point in putting the enumerated list after it, because the general welfare clause would justify anything. So the federal government has no authority to be in education, and if it doesn't follow the Constitution, it is violating the most basic law in America.
And, of course, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments specifically stated that if it isn't listed in the Constitution, federal government shouldn't be doing it. In fact, it's illegal. It's a treasonous act when our, in my opinion, when our congressmen and our senators vote to do things that they are prohibited specifically from doing by the Constitution. And certainly anything that is not specifically stipulated that they have the power to do, they shouldn't be doing. Is that accurate or not?
Absolutely. And if it's not in the Constitution specifically saying federal government, you can do this, then they are prohibited.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Mr. Neil Kosky and the book Feds in the Classroom. Well, as our guest is, of course, Mr. Neil McCloskey. Now, are we better off or worse off than before we had the federal government interfering in our class?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. 866-978-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Let's let the parents make the decision. And we've tried several times here in California to get that through. And every time, why, of course, a tremendous amount of money spent to defeat that, saying, oh, my goodness, that would be unfair. Why, some children would get better education. Why, if we had vouchers, all the good children would leave the schools, and then all you'd have would be the poor performers there in the public schools, and they don't have a chance if we had vouchers and the better educated program left the public schools. What about school vouchers? Is there a place for that? What about the private schools? What about religious schools? What about the choice and desire of the parents? And we know certainly that the black parents are very concerned because they know their kids don't have a chance.
Well, if we're ever to really make real progress in education and to make our education as innovative and driven by competition as just, you know, most of the other things in our lives that we take for granted, from the manufacturing of computer of consumer electronics to computers to cars, if we're really going to do that, then we have to give school choice to everyone, and that might mean vouchers. Essentially, with a voucher, what you're doing is you're saying the money that would otherwise have been sent to a government school that, you know, taken from taxpayers and sent to a government school or a government school district would be given to parents to choose any school they wanted, immediately introducing competition, and with competition, innovation from schools who want to attract as many pupils as they can and make as much money as they can. If you don't have that, if we don't empower parents by giving them all meaningful school choice, breaking the monopoly, we're never going to see any improvement, because ultimately there's no incentive for the schools to improve as long as they not only are getting the money they getting now, but keep getting more and more money from politicians, because they've been able to continue to say, well, we're not doing well because we just don't have the resources.
And here in California, where I live, 50% of the budget, you know, of $110 billion, 50% of that goes to education. And I'm sure if we gave it 100% of the money, they'd still be asking for more.
Mm-hmm. Well, we spend more than only two or three other countries among our economic competitors per pupil in K through 12 schools, and we don't even get close to the performance of countries that spend much less per pupil than we do. And if you look going back about 40 years or so, per pupil expenditures in this country tripled, but there was not even close to a commensurate increase in academic performance. So, I mean, every bit of evidence we have points very clearly to the fact that money and resources, or lack thereof, is not the problem. But, you know, it's the education, the teacher unions, and the school administrators, and all those groups that have all the money to spend the time running the ads and lobbying and getting involved in politics, and they just keep telling us over and over that the problem is they don't have enough money, and it's hard to get the message out broadly enough and repeated enough that's not the case to really make people understand intuitively that we got plenty of money, it's the system that's broken.
Well, what they say, though, is we need smaller classes. If we just had smaller classes and more teachers and better teachers, why, everything would be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, California, they, of any state, should have learned the folly of small class sizes. For one thing, a lot of the countries that do better than we do have very large class sizes. Many of the Asian countries, Hong Kong, Singapore, places like that, they have an average of 40-some kids in math classes, and yet they crush us in math. But California tried the class size reduction strategy, and what they realized is, well, if you do that statewide, you have got to hire a lot more teachers. And the fact of the matter is, there just aren't nearly enough good teachers available to do that. And so they tried to reduce class sizes, and then everybody suffered.
All right, and Chris, the great tragedy is, you know, Chris, whenever they talk about vouchers, they said, you want to destroy the public school system. That's what you want to do. You hate the public school system. You want to destroy the public school system. That's why you want to give parents the opportunity to choose where their child can go to school. That you want to destroy the system because the black parents want the kids to have a chance, and maybe if we had a system that's completely failed, that somebody ought to say, well, if you can't compete, maybe you don't belong here. But nobody wants to say that, do they, Neil?
No, I mean, what we totally get it wrong. What we should be concerned is not about saving the system, it's getting the kids the education that they need, and the only way to do that is school choice.
Amen to that. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, give us a call here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Mr. Neil McCluskey, and we're talking about his book, Feds in the Classroom. And it seems that, you know, the longer we go, the more that the federal government is interfering in education. Certainly, did the No Child Left Behind system expand the federal control of our local schools?
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, for one thing, they've required that every state have standards and tests in math, reading, and science, and that they force all states to test every year in third through eighth grades and once in high school in these areas. And they have to now make something called adequate yearly progress toward full proficiency by 2014. And so all these requirements are new. And then the federal government has also, for the first time, specified specifically what curriculum a school will use, saying that they have to use something scientifically based to teach reading, which means phonics, which is a good way to teach reading, but a terrible precedent that now the federal government will tell everybody what curriculum they will use. So this is a huge intrusion, and it's really the beginning of a complete federal takeover of the schools, or so it seems.
But I see, are the schools using phonics there to teach teach reading? Because, you know, I believe that phonics is the way to do it. But, of course, the federal government talks about it, and they talk about it, but are they doing anything to make sure this is being done?
Well, that's the thing is, there's actually been a big scandal about something called the Reading First program, which was part of No Child Left Behind, where the federal government was going to give out more or less additional grants to the usual money that they send to school districts if they teach reading using, again, scientifically based curriculum, meaning phonics. Well, what happened was the people administering this program ended up having or advising schools specifically what textbooks they could use. And part of the scandal was the people in Congress, mainly Democrats, said, well, this is terrible because these people are directing business to their friends in the name of phonics. And so there's been this big to-do in Washington over whether or not the federal government's going to require everybody to go through the motions of teaching phonics, but they're not actually going to let them go to the point where they make sure they're teaching phonics. And then there's been a lot of question about, well, these mixed curricula and other things that people are saying are phonics really aren't. So you get all the bureaucratic rules and regulations and mandates, but without any of the benefits.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back here. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Mr. Neil McCluskey, who's with the Cato Institute. His book, Feds in the Classroom. And our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, before we go to our callers, and we have several of them, let's tell our listeners how they can get your book and how they can get in touch with the material from the Cato Institute. Do you have a web page or something you'd like to give out?
Sure. Well, you can get the book on any online web seller, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Borders.com. You can also go to your local Barnes & Noble and just pick up a copy there. Or you can go to Cato's website, which is www.cato.org. Not only can you find the book, but you find anything else I've written on education or any of the other Cato people have written on education. And if you're interested in even more in education, you got some time, you can look at everything else that Cato does.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Carrie, Corey, who's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Corey. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I do. I was listening a while ago, and I'm all for the school voucher thing. From personal experience, my daughter was in kindergarten in the public school system, and I did my research and did a special transfer into one of the best public schools in the region, or in this system anyway, in this district. And I had her reading, blending words through a phonics program before she went to kindergarten. And at the end of kindergarten, she was supposedly supposed to know a list of words by sight and knew only about half. So she still wasn't reading even through the 9 months that they were supposed to be doing it.
Okay, so the thing is, I think for our listeners out there, they have to understand, you see the look-see method, which is a system designed to fail, and
right,
phonics where you actually sound it out. And so you taught her phonics, but then they got her in there, and they were giving the look-see, and it did nothing but really create confusion for her, didn't it?
Well, they call it a whole word system, is what they call it. And the problem is you have about 40 sounds in the English language. If you teach this 40 sounds, they can sound out virtually probably 80% of the words in our language. But if you teach them words by sight, we have 40 million words in our language. And it's very difficult to teach a child 40 million words before they graduate.
I mean, well, it may not be quite 40 million, but I know exactly what you're meaning. I have to believe that this system is designed to confuse our kids, and you teach the two of them together, heaven help those children. Anything else
right,
you want to say, Corey?
Yeah, you made the comment earlier, if I'm not mistaken, you can tell me if I am, that the black people would be, the black families would be upset if we had school vouchers because...
Oh, no, they want the school vouchers.
Oh, absolutely. I can't imagine why they wouldn't, because it'd give them the funds they needed to get their kids into private school.
Yeah, and that was the point that would really have that.
I must have been mistaken. Wanted you to clarify that.
No, Mr. McCloskey.
For myself, I've had to make the sacrifice to put all three of my kids into the private school because, I mean, and it's a cost strain, and everything I do goes towards them and their education because I just can't afford to have them go through a public school system where 90 million kids a year graduate illiterate. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Do you have a comment on that, Neil?
Well, yeah, and it's a very important point to note that it's about 57% in the latest poll I've seen of African Americans support school choice, so they definitely support it. And the thing I'd say about phonics is what's really important is the federal government, even though phonics is good, not be the ones who try and impose it on everyone, because one, there are some kids, not the majority, but some are very advanced and know reading and can read well ahead of everyone else. They might not need the same phonics. That's why it's important to have parental choice, because they know the needs of the individual kids best. And the other problem is, as I mentioned earlier, you can have the federal government say they're going to enforce phonics, but usually what happens is you get something that's watered down or different, or they just hide behind the rules and regulations, and will tell parents they're offering phonics. They check the boxes on all the reporting they have to do for the federal government, but they're not really doing it. But once they've gone through the bureaucratic approval, they don't have to provide it because, again, the parents, the kids, and the money attached to them can't go anywhere.
Well, I think one advantage of phonics is it teaches children how to spell, and if the phonics allows them to spell far better than the look-see. Then you got to not only memorize what the word looks like, you got to memorize how the word is spelled. And if you're not spelling it, not sounding it out, well, you do a pretty poor job spelling it. I know because I'm a victim of the look-see method, and I'm a terrible speller.
One of the things that makes me concerned is that if you have a system that doesn't work and nobody's willing to fix it, what's the reasoning behind it?
Well, we can talk a little bit about that. We can talk about that later, unless you want to make a comment, Neil.
Well, I mean, it comes down to the same reason that nothing gets fixed. So long as we have a government monopoly where everybody has to pay into it, everyone has to support it, there's never going to be any change because it doesn't have to change. As long as the system's getting its money, there's no reason for it to stop doing what it's doing.
Okay. I thought competition was what made this country great, is my opinion.
Amen to that. Thanks so much, Corey.
Uh-huh.
And let's go to Jim from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Good evening, sir. The guest, I can't recall your name.
Neil McCluskey.
How you doing?
Well, fine, thank you. I have a couple of quick comments, and I'll hang up and let you respond, and I'll listen on the radio.
All right.
The first thing is my fear with any kind of voucher system or kids, the money follows the kids, anything like that, that in a few years' time, if the private schools took one copper penny from the government, those schools would be on the same road to winding up where we are right now. And the second comment, and then I'll hang up and listen, I have this sad suspicion that if the average school child today could be enrolled in a school that was the quality of the separate but unequal schools that the minorities had to go to before Brown versus Board of Education, they would probably be getting a far superior education in a lot of cases than what they get today.
All right, fine. Thank you so much, Jim. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And so the two points are, well, if we had a voucher system and the government is providing the money, it wouldn't be very long before all the private schools or any other school was under government control. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that's a very legitimate concern. I mean, what the government funds, typically they'll try and regulate. I would say that vouchers, though, would still, I think, be a huge improvement over what we have now. But there is a better way to provide school choice than vouchers, at least to sort of stave off regulation, and that is to base it in tax credits. So individual parents who send their kids to private schools or to homeschool, or they homeschool, or even if they get tutoring or something like that, could get a tax credit for their educational expenses. So what you're really doing is they're saying, we'll take care of our education, and we just don't want to be penalized by having to also send taxes to support public schools. And you can also help ensure that poor kids have the same options with a tax credit for corporations and individuals, where if they give money to scholarship-granting organizations, they get a credit. And the real value of all this to stave off regulation is that this money never actually goes to a state house, never goes through the government. So taxpayers can't say, hey, this is my money, and someone might be taking it to a school I don't like. We have to regulate it. There's none of that connection, so the regulation kind of, it goes away. Now, there'll still be threats, but they're much harder to follow through on.
Maybe Mike is still there. Let's see. Mike, you there?
I am here.
All right, fine. Go right ahead. What was your question?
Well, my question is about the voucher system. It seems that we keep attacking the educational system using the same socialistic or communistic mean in our argument. The government takes our money to produce a social or a communistic education. So why would we even want a voucher system to begin with? All funding of schools basically come from local property taxes. Very, very little from the federal government. So why would we even want, especially when the Constitution doesn't even address education, and I think you made that about the general welfare, schools and education would be a specific welfare. And so they shouldn't even be there. Is that your view as well?
In other words, basically you don't think the federal government should be funding the schools at all is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, heavens no. Why should, you know, in a voucher system, what you're doing is you're still giving credence to the existence of the beast that's going to rule and control, that basically say they are their children, not the parents' children.
All right, how do you respond to that, Neil? Oh, we lost Neil. I'm going to ask our producer to go ahead and see if we can get Neil back on the line here, and so we seem to have lost him, but... anyway, I think it's if we're up to me, basically the function of or financing school has always been a local one. Now I think we'd be far better off if we didn't have public schools at the present time. We had church schools and others, but we're not going to be able to do it away with public education. But it should be local, and it should be from local taxes, not from state taxes, not from federal taxes. Because that gives both the state and the federal government the ability to interfere with the educational system. So my basic feeling would be no money from the federal government and no money from the state government, but local education, local control. And how do you feel about that, Neil?
Well, I think that...
I mean, from a practical point of view, maybe I'm an idealist, maybe a... one of those things, certainly going back to the 17th century, you know, archaic, but I think that if we could get the federal government and the state government out of education and have it controlled locally, then we'd be far better off than we are.
Well, I think that's definitely an improvement. I mean, the closer that you can get control over education to individual communities, which will tend to be more homogenous, which would make it easier to run a district, but where people also know what's going on in the district, there's more transparency. Certainly that would be a huge improvement over what we have now. That said, so long as people still are forced to, you know, their tax monies are going to that government school system, whether they like it or not, you're ultimately going to have people forced to appeal once again to the state, once it's at the local level, if they're not happy, because they can't take their money and leave. Yes, they might
exactly.
Be able to move, but that's very inefficient. And so they're still going to need school choice. Otherwise, power is going to continue to move up to higher levels of government because it's the only way people will be able to appeal if they're not happy with their local district.
Well, what about just keeping the, you know, local taxation to those who would participate in the school itself? And those who, you know, if we are truly a free country, then you can't force freedom at the end of a gun. And if you don't pay your property taxes, the sheriff's definitely going to come out and kick you out of us on the bank's behalf or on the state's behalf. But if our local schools were funded, only the participants of them, then we would have a true free market of school. We would have no need of a voucher to uphold a failing system. The market force for education would do just that.
Right.
And yet that's not something I've heard touted on the program yet.
Right. Well, if you have a system, I think, where just those people who use the local schools pay for the local schools, essentially then what you have is a free market education, because those same people would then have the ability to say, I'm not sending my money to those schools, and take them to private or religious schools if they want. So
that's right. Now you don't have the government pulling and taking your money out of your pocket and then you pleading for that to be returned. Anyway, those were my thoughts. I'll listen to your comments off the line. Thank you so much for entertaining my call, gentlemen.
And thank you very much. Mike, I think you're utopian. I agree with you totally, but from a practical point of view at this present time, it's not going to work, but philosophically, I think you're sound. Would you agree or disagree with that, Neil?
Well, I think that, I mean, ultimately the best thing that can happen is individuals would be enabled to choose whatever educational options they want without penalty and without being coerced or forced, essentially, to support one system. I think that we would still probably want to have something that ensures that the poor can still get education, which is where the tax credits come in. You enable corporations and individuals of their own free choice to donate to these scholarship-granting organizations, then there's no coercion, but you're still having the helping to assure that the poor can get an education.
And, of course, at one time, the churches used to accept responsibility for educating children. In fact, the original major incentive for education was so that children could learn to be able to read the scriptures. That's why it was so important that children learned how to read, so they could read the scriptures. We've come a long way from there, haven't we?
Well, we have, and part of the reason is that, again, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and there were lots of good intentions that drove the idea of public schooling, and that, you know, this would make it available to everybody on an equal basis. But one of the many awful consequences of that is government has taken over control, and the churches have been more or less pushed out of it, because you'd have to pay for the education your church is providing on top of what you have to pay for public schools.
Amen to that. Well, our guest this evening has been Neil McCluskey. His book, Feds in the Classroom, a very good reading, very good history of education. I recommend the book to you. And we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Neil, do you have we've got about 3 minutes before we have to let you turn into a pumpkin. Do you have any closing thoughts for our program this evening?
Well, I think it all comes back to the same theme. Federal control of education is the absolute worst possible scenario. I mean, even with state and local control, at least if people are not happy what their states are providing or the local districts are providing, they could move. They still have some ability to exercise school choice within the public education system. That said, state control and local control aren't a whole lot better than federal control. And so ultimately, if we want to keep federal control away and provide the innovation and the competition and the innovation and the freedom that we want from education and our educational system, we've got to change it from a system where everyone pays taxes to support government-run schools to one where the money goes to parents, or the parents are the ones who are in control, and they choose the schools, and schools are autonomous. You can pick a private school, religious school, whatever school you like, and then when you get real market forces working, you get real competition, real innovation, then we'll finally get the education system we need and deserve.
And I really think that's absolutely right. If we had competition, the schools would have to excel, otherwise they wouldn't have any students coming to them. Parents would not knowingly send their children to a school that was giving them an inadequate or inferior education, that was not teaching them how to read, that was giving them the fuzzy math, that was withholding from them the knowledge of history, and rather spending their time indoctrinating them in environmentalism and sex education, and turning out kids to know a lot more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, a lot more than they do about Marilyn Monroe than they do about mathematics. So I think you're absolutely right. We've got to get to a competitive system and let the parents determine what's good for their children. I think that when this is any centralized planning doesn't work in Russia, why would we adopt that here in America? And that's what the federal system of public education is. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. That's kind of the great irony is we make a big deal out of being a free country, which is, of course, what is
important about America. It is a free country. Yet so many people are under the notion that we have to have an unfree school system where we try and give everybody the same thoughts and sort of mold them into a uniform, non-troublemaking child so that they can then be free. So we really want to take away their freedom, and then after that, let them have all the freedom they want.
God bless.
That's totally incompatible.
Thanks very much for being with us. Bye-bye.
So long.
Right, bye. This is Dr. Stan and Sydney. With our guest this evening has been Neil McCloskey and Sydney. I think that we have several excellent books on education. One of them is called None Dare Call It Education by John Stormer. One is called Brave New Schools by Barrett Schoes. And one is called Fed Ed, and it's by Alan Quest. And we have a four-tape set on Fed Ed and this process, this federal education, and what it is doing. We have another four-tape set on outcome-based education. And if you read those books, None Dare Call It Education, Brave New Schools, and Fed Ed, and then, of course, get those two four-tape sets, what is Fed Ed, and, of course, the other is the outcome-based education, you will understand that there is an organized effort to dumb down our children. One of our callers called in and said, why aren't we getting a better education? Why are these things happening? Because there are people who have a different vision of what America should be, and they are intentionally dumbing down our children through the educational process, but it's really much more than that. I mean, basically, almost every child has been in America today has been damaged by receiving vaccines. Even the Centers for Disease Control will admit that one in six children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality. The latest statistics out of Great Britain over the weekend, one in 58 children in England today has autism or an autism-like disease. One in 58 children. And we never used to see this before the vaccines. Vaccines are not safe and efficient, and you better start getting the information on that. And then, of course, we're poisoning our children with water fluoridation, specifically the black children, because they don't use fluoride. Most of the water systems, they use something called hydrofluosilicic acid that contains lead and arsenic and polonium. What's the safe level of lead in the drinking water? What's the safe level of cadmium and polonium? 210, that's what they poison Victor Litvinenko, I believe it is, with over in England, Litvinenko. I mean, what's the safe dose of polonium in the drinking water? There is none. And they did the largest study of its kind on 450,000 children doing finger sticks and checking the blood. If you were in one of those areas where you were getting water that had the hydrofluosilicic acid level, might be added to the water, you double the incidence of lead in the white children, and you increased it six times in the black children. And they know that in Washington, D.C. They know that at the Centers for Disinformation, they call the CDC. And, of course, they know that at the FDA. All of these studies are readily available. You've just never heard about them. Water fluoridation is designed to damage the minds of our children and to lower their intelligence. So the same is true for aspartame, especially when it's given to pregnant women. They know what it does. They just don't want parents to know. And you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and get the information we have on aspartame. Get the information that we have on water fluoridation, including my talk on the hidden agenda and the either in DVD or VHS and the syllabus that goes with that. Get the information on mercury and what I'd suggested, Dr. David Ayoub's excellent DVD, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. That's Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. And if you get that, you'll get a CD-ROM with thousands of pages of documents on how they're poisoning the minds of our children. So we have an educational system that's failed, and then we're poisoning our children. who would do something like that? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there are people who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And once you understand that, so much of what's going on really does make sense. That number again, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening for this hour, we have Deborah Dombrowski, who is with the Lighthouse Trails of Ministry. And they're certainly up in the, is that Oregon or Washington, Deborah?
It is. It's Oregon.
All right. Well, and, of course, they are on the cutting edge of trying to educate the American people about the attack on Christianity from within. Now, certainly, there is an occult movement in our society that is attacking Christianity from without. But, unfortunately, our enemies are within the gates, and they're using the structure of the Christian church to undermine and destroy the very fundamentals of our Christian faith. And so Deborah's there, and Deborah, why don't you pick up the story as to what you see happening and what we can do about it.
Well, hi, Stan. We're going to talk about the secret tonight, is that right?
Right, we're going to talk about the secret. And, of course, a lot of Christians have seen the book or seen the DVD, and they think this is a wonderful, wonderful way to find happiness and fulfillment in their lives. Certainly, Rhonda Byrne's The Secret is promises them things that they could never get simply out of traditional Christianity.
Right, that's true. For those that aren't aware of what The Secret is, although most people may have heard of it by now, Rhonda Byrne is the creator of it, and it just came out in... The DVD came out in early 2006, and the book followed around fall of the same year, last year. And since then, it has hit the New York Times bestseller list week after week, month after month. USA Today reported just a couple weeks ago that the DVD has now sold over 2 million copies, and there are over 5.2 million copies of the book in print. So it's doing very well. It is very popular. Larry King, most people know who that is. He said that, Larry King calls the DVD the most profound information he has run across in 40 years. So this is something that has really hit pretty hard, and people really are paying attention to it.
Well, certainly Oprah Winfrey has endorsed it
exactly.
Once but twice on her program.
Yes, and since then is really when sales really escalated, because most of us know that if Oprah does promote a book or a movie or anything like that, it's going to do very well. And she has really, in fact, she said that when she did do the two shows on it, she said, this is the message I have been trying to get across for 20 years. So the secret, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, to try to, you know, look at what that message really is that Oprah and others are trying to get across to Christians, to Americans, to the world, really.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand what the message of The Secret is, and certainly they promise all sorts of wonderful things. They promise,
right.
They promise personal fulfillment. They promise you that you can have whatever you want.
I read something by Rhonda Byrne, who, like I said, is the one that started it, wrote it. She said that her goal, she just wanted people to be happy. You know, she just this. She thinks this is the way for people to be happy, to have what they want in life, all the riches, all the dreams, all whatever they want. So on the outside, it could look very, very good because, you know, everybody, you know, somebody that wants everyone to be happy, that sounds really good.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, I guess it's Deborah Dombrowski. Go ahead, Deborah.
So Rhonda, she had kind of hit a low spot in her life and got this illumination of which she found that this secret dated back, you know, thousands of years, and people, people like Einstein, well, that's not thousands of years, but people like Einstein and Abraham Lincoln, and then going back thousands of years, certain people throughout history had this secret.
I know, and she did specifically mention Plato and Aristotle, mm-hmm. and Pythagoras, people who were aware of this secret, and these great philosophers of the past upon whose work Western civilization is created. And I am sure in my own mind and on my own reading that these men did access the secret information. Pythagoras had gone over into the Near East and that studied the mystery religions, had come back to Greece and actually set up a school where he taught the mystery religions and, of course, the secrets from these ancient religions. So you pick up the story there, Deborah.
Right, and I think that's why, you know, we need to look at what the dynamics of the secret is. That, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about the background of it, how it got started and what made it so popular with Larry King and Oprah's promotion of it. The dynamics of it, in a nutshell, is what they're calling the law of attraction. And it would be like, she says that we're like magnets, and we attract what we think. So if we think good thoughts, then good things are going to happen to us. If we think bad thoughts, bad things are going to happen to us. She also says it's the law of attraction is the same as the law of creation. Because the idea is that you actually can create your own reality. They show in one of the trailers, they show a little boy who wants a red bicycle, or wants a bicycle, and he's thinking about this bicycle, and day after day he's thinking about it, and next thing you know, there it is, you know, he's got the bicycle. And this could be another person they show. She is thinking about, you know, she's lonely and she wants that, you know, the man of her dreams, and she's thinking about it and wishing for it, focusing on it. The next thing you know, she's got the man of her dreams. And so that's kind of the outward dynamic of the secret. It's the law of attraction.
They say that the law of attraction is like the law of gravity. In other words, the law of gravity is a basic physical law.
Exactly.
They claim a law of attraction is a basic physical law, but they don't give you any basis at all for that. And we're going to be back in just a moment with Deborah Dombrowski. Well, Deborah was simply going into the background of the material that Rhonda Burns has put out in her DVD and her book, The Secret. And basically it is founded on the law of attraction, which they claim, like the law of gravity, which is basic physical law, and nobody would question the law of gravity. So the law of attraction is a basic physical law, that you attract to you whatever you want. And of course, if you think good thoughts, good things will happen to you. If you think bad thoughts, bad things will happen to you. And with your mind, you can begin to alter reality. So pick the story up there, Deborah.
Well, and what is interesting is, and what most people will not realize unless they kind of delve into it a little bit, and you can actually see, find this out right in the book itself under her acknowledgments, where she talks or thanks various people, various occultists and different people like that, and but she thanks the teachings of Abraham. Now, the teachings of Abraham, Abraham is a group of spirit guides, non-physical beings, who have given this instruction and information to a couple named, well, it was Esther Hicks, and Rhonda Byrne has been very close to her and gained much knowledge from her. And so, in reality, the secret is a channeled work. It's actually been channeled from these spirit guides named Abraham, because really the law of attraction is not a biblical law. It is not biblically grounded at all, but it is grounded in the occultic teachings of demons, and that can be easily proven by the book itself.
Well, all right, how could we prove that through the book itself?
Well, number one is, just as I said, talking about the teachings of Abraham. The fact that she acknowledges that what she says in the book and what her teachers say, because she's got a couple dozen teachers here, she's getting her information from these spirit guides. But then as you go through the book, you begin to realize that the message of the book is not just about getting things for yourself, you know, the riches, the dreams, all of this. It actually is coming to the realization that you are God. And we know from Isaiah 14, when Lucifer said that he, you know, his desire was to be like the Most High God. And that is what is happening in this book, in The Secret. It's this realization that we are really equal to God. And in a few minutes, when we progress a little bit, I want to share something that I actually just found out very recently about the book. But right now, you know, just to understand that the premise of the secret is faulty from the very beginning. It's been inspired by the teachings of Abraham, and then what she has through the book are several teachers that she has turned to for who practice the secret. And throughout there, the message really is the same, that we are co-creators because we are equal to God.
In fact, one of the points that they make is certainly that all material is energy. The material world we live in is energy. That God is energy. That we are energy. Therefore, we are God. And that's a really sort of an interesting concept. And she even tells you that henceforth, when she refers to you, Y-O-U, it'll be with a capital Y, because you are God.
Right.
And you wonder, what sort of insanity is this?
Uh-huh.
And yet that is the basic message of The Secret, that you have the ability with your mind to be able to move and change the universe. You can do this, and you can draw to yourself all these wonderful things you want. And the trouble is that in many instances, it actually works, but of course you're not doing it yourself. It is these spirit beings that you're contacting that are actually rewarding you for your faithfulness.
Right. Something in the beginning of her book, it's actually kind of like a dedication page. It says this: as above, so below; as within, so without. And it's from the Emerald Tablet, about 3000 B.C., and what this is, as above, so below. In fact, interestingly, many of your listeners may know Warren Smith, who wrote Deceived on Purpose, which is the book about purpose-driven life. And Warren Smith talks about this as above, so below, and explains the history of it. And it's a very New Age concept going back to I'll see if I can pronounce this right. Hermes
Trismegistus, right.
I think.
Right.
Did I say that right?
Right.
Something like that. Anyway, that would go back to ancient Egypt, and he was a great, well, it was, he was
he
synonymous
was, he was one
to,
of these mythological gods.
Well, that was it, right, but there was an actual person named,
right.
Named this also, and basically it would be the, kind of the origin of magic, and the belief system of magic anyway, which would be the occult, and that's interesting that she says as above, so below, which is connected to him, because on page, where is that, in her book, she actually talks about various teachings, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, she even mentions Christianity, Islam, and then she talks about the Hermetic traditions, which are occultic traditions. And so you really can see that this book really does have a foundation of the occult. She starts it from the very first page when she says, as above, so below. Interestingly, on that same concept, there is a book called As Above, So Below, written by Ronald S. Miller and the editors of New Age Journal. And the book talks about what they call the emerging spirituality, or a new era. And the new era is, it says here, it is to realize the divinity within. So this idea of as above, so below is that God is in all things, and really, because, you know, God is in us all and we are God, we are co-creators with him, which goes back to creating our own reality, getting those things we want in life, basically making what that law of attraction, making that happen.
And I really think this goes right back to the Garden of Eden.
It does.
Where the serpent says to Eve, if you will eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, why, of course, you can become as God, and you will never die.
Mm-hmm.
You will then have unknown, you'll have this great strength, you can become as God, and that is what this whole tradition is about. And, of course, the Emerald Tablet was something that Hermes had, and in the DVD, they very dramatized this very, very beautifully. There's this man who got hold of the Emerald Tablet, and he put a piece of paper on it, and then he scribbled on it so that he would actually be able to then transfer the message onto this paper, and then he buried it.
Mm.
And it was always, of course, to be hidden from the public. The public, the people were never to understand what the secret was.
And that really is the opposite of the gospel message.
Hey, right.
This reminds me a lot of the emerging church that's taking place right now. It's really a lot of the same thing going on, and that's a lot of, there's one of, not to get off track here, but one of the emerging leaders, Brian McLaren, has a book called The Secret Message of Jesus. But in reality, there is no secret message of Jesus. The gospel was presented. It says that Jesus Christ come in the flesh. I mean, he is the mystery of God is Jesus Christ that was fulfilled through him. And the gospel is not hidden. It's available. It's there. And it, you know, it offers sinful man free salvation. Whereas the thing, in fact, the word occult, and Ray might have talked about this when he was on, Ray Young, and the word occult means hidden. It actually means hidden, the hidden things. And so what we have here are two opposite things going on. You've got the gospel, which is Jesus said, I am the light of the world, and then you've got the secret. And in reality, Brian McLaren's book should have been called The Secret Message of the Emerging Church, because that's where the real secret and the hidden things are, and because they're occultic.
And, of course, this has been around for 5,000 years, mm-hmm. and, of course, the secret was always this. That you could contact the other dimension, and there was where the power was. And this is where Pythagoras got his knowledge and power, and where Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great got their knowledge and power. And many great people have learned this, and they've accomplished great and amazing things. But it was because they contacted the spirit guides from the other dimension. And they utilized their knowledge and their power for personal advancement and gain. But, of course, one day they're going to have to pay, and I'm sure many of them have paid, by eternal damnation. But this knowledge has been passed down, hidden, for really thousands of years. And it is interesting, Deborah, that at this time in history, this would be widely popularized and being given to really millions of people throughout the world who are going to be taken into the demonic realm.
Right, and you know, what this really is it's a jumping ground to a mystical paradigm shift that's taking place. You know, you take yoga and Reiki and, of course, now The Secret. You put all these, and contemplative in the Christian church and all of these things, there is definitely a mystical paradigm shift taking place where thousands, millions of people are practicing mysticism. And, you know, the scriptures in the Old Testament, you know, where they talk about do not turn to mediums, do not, you know, go to the mediums. What's really happening here, and Ray and I were talking about this before the show, what's really happening is people are not just going to mediums anymore, they are becoming mediums.
Yeah,
but not just a few anymore, millions of people.
And they're able then to contact these demonic beings.
Right.
And they themselves then have the potential to become channelers, just as Esther Hicks, who was the inspiration for this whole thing, at least according to Rhonda Byrne, and was actually in the original presentation. They took her out because they didn't want the American people or the people going into this to realize that it came from the demonic realm. Go right ahead, Deborah.
Well, I was, talking about this kind of jump into this, you know, this paradigm shift of mysticism. And it's interesting, but one of the things I was thinking about recently is Harry Potter. And a lot of people think that even many Christians don't really believe in a supernatural. They think it's kind of silly, that it's just nonsense. And that's often why some of them will say, well, there's nothing harmful about something like Harry Potter and nothing harmful about even yoga, because these are just things we do. There's no supernatural connotation there. But something that Ray has pointed out in Harry Potter is this term superconsciousness. And that's interesting because that is even used in witchcraft. And that superconsciousness is basically, it's the same thing as The Secret. It's just realizing that inner being who can do all things, and he is equal to God. And so really, while Harry Potter may appear to be very harmless, it's just another piece of the puzzle that is taking society into this mystical world. And so the question people have to ask, what realm is this mystical world? Is it the realm of God, or is it the realm of evil? We believe it's the realm of evil, you know. And so when people say, well, these things are just silly or ridiculous, or they don't really mean anything, that actually isn't true. I've read a lot of the different news articles that have come out, and some have come out and said, oh, the secret is just a hoax, or it's silly. Now, there may be that aspect of it in one sense, but in reality, it's very real, because we know the Bible says that there is a realm, a spiritual realm, and there is a spiritual warfare going on. And we often think that everything we see is just, I mean, that everything that is real is just what we see with our eyes, but that's not the case at all. And this is a perfect example of that. And Rhonda Byrne, I believe she knows that. I can't say what her motivation. She says her motivation is to make people happy. But where is she getting that information? Where is she getting her energy, you could say?
Well, I think that, of course, she knows that Esther Hicks, who actually was in the original version of the film, and
right.
Then, of course, and she actually was the narrator of it, and then they took her out. And I don't know what the financial arrangements were, but certainly she's acknowledged in the book as one of the inspirations for this. But Esther Hicks was actually a medium, and she channeled this group of demonic beings, these spirits known as Abraham. She travels across the country, channeling these spirits. And certainly Rhonda Byrne knows that this is based upon channeling of the spirits. And believe me, these spirits are real. They're not imaginary. And people are opening their minds and their very souls to this demonic possession. This is the thing that really frightens me about the whole implications of the secret, because millions of people are laying themselves open to eternal damnation.
Right, and one of the things that with Esther Hicks, she promotes meditation, and when she was...
Hold that though, we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Deborah Dombrowski. And Deborah was just saying that Esther Hicks, who is certainly the person who came up with this idea of the law of attraction, she's written a book about it. And certainly, of course, Rhonda Burns admits that she got a great deal of her information from Esther and Jerry Hicks, who certainly Esther channels a group of demonic spirits known as Abraham. And yet, of course, they're not going to tell the people who are being introduced to this whole concept of the secret that it is founded in the occult. So go right ahead there, Deborah.
So she, Esther Hicks, you know, she is a practitioner and a promoter of meditation, and not speaking of meditating on, you know, the Word of God that the Bible tells us to do, consciously meditating on His Word. But a mantra-type meditation where if you repeat a word or a phrase, or you focus on your breath, or you focus on some object, you can actually go into an altered state where you supposedly can get information. Some people think they're getting information from God. In Esther Hicks's case, she would be getting her information from the teachings of Abraham, from these teachings, from these spirit guides. One of the things, when she was left out of the final copy of The Secret, for they had, I think, a falling out of some sort, something happened there, like you mentioned, the meditation element was, you know, really kind of left out too. And what we're kind of wondering is, what's going to happen next with Rhonda Byrne and The Secret? Is there going to be a second stage here, where they will now be able to, this was kind of getting people used to the idea of the law of attraction, and now, you know, is meditation going to actually come into play here? And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see what transpires with this whole thing, and just how people are going to continue to react. We're talking, like I said, 5.2 million copies of the book in print, and over 2 million copies of the DVD sold. So in it, with a DVD, that means far more than 2 million people have viewed that DVD. Most people share a DVD with their family, maybe some friends. And so millions of people are being affected. And it's not going to just end. It, you know, we kind of wondered, is this just going to die down after a few months? But that isn't happening. It's still on the New York sellers, New York Times bestsellers list under how-to books, I believe.
Well, of course, one of the things that what they have you just sit there and begin concentrating on what you want. You want a new car?
Right.
Why, you imagine you're in that car. And in the process, you're really almost in the process of meditating. You want a necklace. You want this beautiful necklace. You begin
right.
to meditate. You begin to focus your attention on that necklace, and of course the DVD dramatically shows how the necklace will come to you, the car will come to you, the home will come to you. Whatever you focus your attention on, you're going to be able to get.
Right, and so in a way, it already is right. got the meditation aspect of it because of that focusing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, people get results sometimes. I don't know how many million kids now, but I know it's over 4 million kids that have been in the public schools that have been on Ritalin for what they say are hyperactive children, and they're actually teaching kids to meditate now and taking them off Ritalin, and they're saying it works.
And it does work, but the thing is, of course, what are you doing to that child's soul? What are you doing to their mind?
And, you know, when you look at all the different scriptures in the Old Testament that say, do not turn to mediums, do not turn to spiritists, do not practice divination. Divination, this is divination, is, you know, how I see it, because in divination you do some kind of method or ritual or something, some kind of focusing, whatever, to gain some information from, you know, in that case, a spirit guide. And the Bible is very clear that we are not to do this. So regardless of whether people think, well, if it works, it must be good, that is not true, and that is not a biblical principle to say that just because something feels good or works, you know, that it's okay. It's okay to do that, because that is really not putting our foot. That's the carnal mind as opposed to the spiritual mind, which we can only have in Christ.
And I really think that this is one of the most dangerous things I've ever seen, because it is so alluring. It certainly gives you this feeling, what could be wrong if you really could, of course, get anything you wanted simply by learning how to manipulate the universe with your mind. And those are their words, not mine. But, of course, you're not really manipulating the universe. You're opening it up to demonic possession. We'll be right back with Rhonda. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, one of the things that bothers me, Rhonda, is the fact that, Deborah, one of the things that bothers me is that, you know, there seems to be so little opposition to this. Certainly on the major television, all we hear, maybe a little criticism. Well, I mean, how can these things really work? And are we maybe going to give some people the idea that, well, they're responsible for their bad luck because they were thinking about it? And how do you explain the hurricane in New Orleans? Were all these people thinking about a hurricane? Is that why the reason that the hurricane came?
Right.
And yet, of course, Rhonda always has an explanation. And I don't know if you've read any of her interviews, but she says, yes, you know, these people were all thinking about a hurricane, and that's why it came to them. And she sees nothing dangerous about what she is advocating.
And it really is a mockery against God, against the creator of the universe. Because, you know, to say that, it's just a mockery. And you were talking a minute ago about just how people don't seem to be really, for the most part, having any problem with it. And when you've got someone like Larry King saying it's the most profound information that he's run across in 40 years, that's a pretty powerful statement. You know, he's seen a lot of different types of information, talked to a lot of different people, and he's saying this is the most incredible that he's ever seen. You know, that really says a lot, and I'm kind of amazed that he would say something like that, really, because he's giving it a very powerful endorsement.
Well, of course, it's been endorsed by a number of people. Jim Carrey has endorsed this. Mm-hmm. Ellen DeGeneres has endorsed this as well. Saying, of course, that she agrees with these concepts. But I think the most dangerous thing for people is the endorsement by Oprah Winfrey, because she professes to be a Christian.
Yes, she does.
And yet, of course, this is certainly the furthest thing from the Christ of the Bible. Now, I think where we get into trouble is there are many people who claim to be Christians, but they worship a different Christ.
Right, right. And the Bible warns us about that, too. It says, you know, that there will be many that will come in the name of Christ, or saying that they are Christ or a Christ. And I think we're witnessing that right now. I know Ray has talked a lot about that, and just there's always been different signs. You know, the Bible talks about different signs that will happen in the last days, but one thing that there wasn't so much of as there is now, and that is mysticism. And it has really gone rampant. It is in the church. It is in, you know, the Christian church at large.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Deborah Dombrowski from Lighthouse Trails Ministry. And Deborah, before we go on, I want you to go ahead and get your web page and any information you'd like to get out, if a telephone number or something of that sort, for our listeners so that they could get your very excellent information. I would point out that Lighthouse Trails puts out an email, a warning, on a regular basis, something that every one of you in the audience needs to read. I'm sure they agonize over it. They do a great job. They have information you will not find elsewhere, well-researched, foundational to the Christian faith. So how can people get in touch with your organization and get your information?
Well, when they're on the Internet, the best way, we have three websites, but the main one, lighthousetrailsresearch.com, just like it sounds, lighthousetrails, with an S, research.com. And there are hundreds of pages and thousands of links, and it's topically and alphabetically indexed, and there's a search engine, so it's, you know, pretty easy to get around. There's also a blog that you can get to from that main site, and also our publishing site. We started off as a small publisher when we came across a book or manuscript that was talking about contemplative prayer, and we wanted to see it get published, and eventually we were able to publish that. So that's kind of how we got started. But if they go to that main site, lighthousetrailsresearch.com, they can sign up for the free e-newsletter, which we put out about once a week, right to your email. And then there's the blog and things like that. So there's a lot of information. And then we also have a links page that lists several wonderful ministries that are really doing what we're doing, too. We all have a little different emphasis, you might say, but it's really our hope is that we're helping the body of Christ, assisting in giving them the information that they need to make some decisions about, you know. And for those that you know, are not part of the body of Christ, we hope that we can present the gospel, that they can see what the gospel is. And so that links page is good, too, and you can see that at the top of the page there, and that has about, 25 different other organizations that also are giving out very good information.
And, of course, we carry a number of the books that they put out, The Time of Departing by Ray Youngen, and then his latest book, Many Have Come in My Name, or First Many Should Come in My Name. And then, of course, we carry the published Warren Smith's books. What are the titles of those?
Warren Smith's books are Deceived on Purpose, which the first book he had was The Light That Was Dark. That's his testimony. Excellent book.
You carry that one?
And Deceived on Purpose is the story about, or the book about the, it says here, the subtitle, The New Age Implications of the Purpose-Driven Church. That is a fantastic book. And both of those can be actually gotten through Bookmasters.
Well, we actually carry both of them.
And you're carrying those.
Right, right.
That's right. So they can just get them from you. And then he has an online book called Reinventing Jesus Christ. Excellent book. And you can just go to www.reinventingjesuschrist.com. And that is a very important book as well.
And then you have a book, I believe, by Mrs. Dietman about her experiences in Germany. What's that one?
Yes, we do. We started, it's called Trapped in Hitler's Hell. It's a true story of a Holocaust survivor. Her name is Anita Dittmann. She is still alive. She's 80 years young. I say young because she still goes out and speaks to groups about her experience in Germany. She was a Jewish believer. She became a Christian as a young girl, and that's her story. She's been on your show, and she loves being on your show, and she's just a wonderful woman. I just love her. And she is such an inspiration. And we published that book. It was a reprint. We did our own edition of it with photos and everything because we really see the connection. People were so blindsided by Hitler, and we believe that they're being blindsided today by what's happening.
I agree with you. In fact, we even have a four-tape set, including an interview with Mrs. Dietman. But it's called The Truth About the Holocaust, and we have her testimony and the testimony of other people who lived through that terrible time. The Truth About the Holocaust, information you will not get elsewhere, four CDs, four tapes on that subject, and Anita Dietman is one of the people. Well, if you're out in the listening audience, you have a question for Deborah in reference to The Secret and what she's talking about, this sudden introduction of a concept that is so foreign to traditional Christianity. And basically what this is this information that comes down from Hermes, and it comes down to the ancient mystics and magicians of the of Babylon and Assyria and Egypt. And then, of course, we find these concepts codified in the Kabbalah about 600 B.C. We find them, of course, codified and utilized by the Gnostics. Certainly, this was the source of so much of the information and the secret information that was transmitted by the Greek philosophers to their students, Pythagoras, certainly, and then two generations later, Socrates and Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great was a student of the mysteries, and that's how he was able to accomplish the amazing military feats he did. If you doubt that, you need to see my talk entitled The Forbidden Secret. And then, of course, we trace these things up to the time of the Templars in 1100 and 1200s, and then, of course, into the Rosicrucians in the 1400s. And if you were to watch the video, The Secret, frame by frame, at each break before you go into a master of wisdom or a new teacher, you would find there scrawled on the screen in just one frame, you'll find, of course, this it's the word, they actually use the word Rosicru. It doesn't say shun, but R-O-S-A-C-R-U-C. And basically this is Rosicrucianism. And of course, then of course it comes down to the Illuminati and all of these other things, and right up into modern times. It is ancient mysticism repackaged. Go ahead. Deborah?
Yes. Let's see. Where are we at now?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Onto The Secret, you mean?
The Secret, right.
Okay. I was going to actually read a couple quotes from The Secret. They're short ones, just to kind of, show people what this book is really, saying. And some of the people may have heard some of these, but I'll just read a couple of them. The first one is on page 175 of The Secret. It says, "We are the creators not only of our own destiny, but also of the universe. We are all connected, and we are all one." The next one, "No matter who you thought you were, now you know the truth of who you really are. You are the master of the universe. You are the heir to the kingdom. You are the perfection of life." And then one more, last one. That was page 183. This is page 164. "You are God in a physical body. You are all power. You are all intelligence. You are the creator." And I would think that if anyone had any questions about The Secret, that when they got to those last pages and they read those statements, that they would realize that this is a very anti-biblical, anti-God, anti-creator book. I don't know how else to put it.
And the idea that we are the creator, that we are God? I mean, right. What sort of blasphemy is that?
It is. It is blasphemy. And to think that even some Christians see nothing wrong with it, think it's just a way to, positive thinking or something. In fact, I mentioned this when, we talked about this before, Irwin McManus, who is one of, I consider him an emerging church leader, John Gordon, who is a friend of his, John Gordon is a New Age promoter, wrote the book called The 10-Minute Energy Solution. Some people may have heard of that, where he talks about the Dalai Lama and meditation and various things like that. But they were having a discussion, this was on John Gordon's website, and they talked about the fact that we as people are co-creators of life with God. And John Gordon really likes The Secret. He believes that it's a very important work, and a very important book. And so this idea of co-creator, some Christians may hear of that if their churches are getting into the emerging teachings, the emerging church teachings, because there's a Willow Creek talks about this. A lot of people have heard of Willow Creek Church, and they have the leadership summits with a lot of well-known people. And so this, it's really the same idea that we can create our own reality. And so when you think about all the things we've talked about tonight, the idea that it would actually be in Christian churches, but it is. It's really the same thing. Thomas Merton, he said, and he's, Thomas Merton would be kind of like the father of the modern contemplative prayer movement. He said that if we realized what was in each one of us, we'd bow down and worship one another, because he believed that God was in all things also, in all people. And so sometimes some of these things look like they're different, but in reality, I believe they're all going in the same direction. There's only two directions to go in life. That's either toward God or away from God. And the Bible says the only way you can go toward God is through Jesus Christ. So if something is not giving him glory and is not really pointing to him, then it's going the other direction.
And I really think, Christy, the important thing is that either God is God and we are his creation, or, of course, we are God and we don't need a Savior. We can actually transform anything we want to on our own, and that is Lucifer's lie.
Mm-hmm. Right, because Christianity and the gospel of Jesus Christ, yes, it is a man, a woman, you must humble yourself and acknowledge, I am a sinner. I need God. I need a Savior. I actually find it, in a sad way, humorous to think that we would call ourselves co-creators when we can't even create a speck of dust. We could sit there and we can't create anything on our own. And one of the books by one of the emerging guys called Rob Bell, his name is Rob Bell, the book is Velvet Elvis. Amazingly enough, the book actually, I don't have it in front of me right now, I forgot to grab that one, but he talks about being, co-creator, and how land is a co-creator with God. But if you took a barren piece of land, you put it there, it's not going to create anything on its own. It's going to stay barren. It is God who is the creator. And but yet, that book, Velvet Elvis, is being used in Christian high schools and junior high schools. That's incredible. So really, the very message of The Secret, that we are all co-creators and that, we can create our own, is being promoted in the Christian church today.
And I think the trouble is that nobody's out there warning Christians. This is the thing that really disturbs me about all of this, is that there is no voice on the other side.
Well, and on the contrary, in fact, we just put an article on our blog just a few days ago, because there was an article by Erwin McManus, and I don't have it right in front of me, but basically very upset with those people that would be critical of him and other emerging leaders, Rick Warren, who I consider an emerging leader, saying that, it's really terrible, and actually saying that people that criticize them are violent, and saying really in essence that they don't want anybody to criticize or to question them at all. And that is something that is kind of scary when you see this marginalization of Bible-believing Christians, where we are looked at as spiritual oddballs if we say that we don't really believe that mysticism is of God. Suddenly we are made to look like there is something wrong with us. And like you say, The media, in fact, one of the new books we have coming out is called Faith Undone by Roger Oakland. It's got some really powerful information in there about the church and the emerging church. But it talks in one of the chapters about how some of this got started. And it was really very well financed. It was not just a move by like a bunch of young people. It was really very well financed, and people can read about that in the book. But things are not always as they seem. Isn't that something you say on your show? Things just are not always as they seem, and people need to be looking. And if the leaders, whoever a person's leaders are, if they are not saying, if they're not warning about spiritual deception, then then the average person needs to stop and say, okay, I need to stop looking to leaders. I need to look to the Word of God. I need to seek this out and find out what the truth is myself, rather than just blindly following the next leader, whoever that might be at the time. Rick Warren has been a leader. That's been very clear. Is he leading people, you know, toward or away from God? That's something people need to ask themselves and study these things. And not just accept everything, and definitely not accept everything Oprah's saying.
And I think when people say they're Christians, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're worshiping the same Jesus Christ that we worship. It's
right.
Not the Christ of the Bible, it's another Christ. In fact, the Muslims worship Jesus, but he is simply a prophet, like Muhammad, only an inferior prophet. And the New Agers talk about not Jesus Christ, but the Christ. And that is, of course, is a position. It is not, of course, the position of divinity. He is not Lord. He is simply another avatar who's come to lead us into an understanding that we are God.
That's a really good point, too. And one of the things that's happening is a movement called the Spiritual Formation Movement, where they're saying if you do certain practices, which, by the way, meditation happens to be pretty much the main one, if you do certain practices, you can be like Christ. Now, that is opposed to the idea of having Jesus Christ living inside of you, being born again, like the Bible talks about, and actually having the indwelling of Christ. Those are two different things. And so they say you can be a Christ follower. You don't necessarily have to associate with being a Christian. In other words, you don't have to have Jesus in you. You can just do the things that he did and be like him. But then why not? You could say the same thing. You could be do the same things that Gandhi did and be like Gandhi. So there's a difference there, and that's where it can be very deceiving, because if you hear a Christian leader say that you can be a Christ follower if you do these practices, you can be just like Christ, there's a difference there.
And I think we have to be so careful about this meditation, this contemplative meditation, that ever to want to get to experience Christianity. Christian mysticism is a path away from Jesus Christ into an entirely different realm. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Well, we have Will calling from Missouri, who's been waiting very patiently. Will, did you have a question for our guest?
I do. The first part of it would be a question. The second part of it would be perhaps dialogue along the same lines. But I would wonder whether or not Deborah had ever heard of Paul J. Meyer and the Success Motivation Institute.
I haven't heard of that, no. Now, Ray Youngin may have, but I haven't.
Well, Paul Meyer developed this system out of Waco, Texas, and sold it widely. But it's been picked up by many people, including the Amway organization. I'm a former distributor of the Success Motivation Institute products and made several trips down to Waco to get training and to sell their products, which were basically tapes and books, etc. But this process that you're describing sounds very much the same as what I experienced there. Through the process of goal setting and affirmation and visualization, the same story is being sold to those people.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I was duped by it, but later I discovered, and I would agree, that this is not something that you want to play with. It's certainly not something you want to delve into, and you really need to do your homework before you go there.
I think it's this visualization, of course, that almost puts you in a meditative state. Well, and of course, this is an old trick. It's been around for about 5,000 years, and I think you're absolutely right. We certainly don't want to play with it.
No.
We want to warn people away from it.
Absolutely.
Well, and with those motivational programs, like you said, Amway, and think about how many others like that there are now, different products and different companies where probably that they are doing a lot of, I've heard some of them, and now that you've mentioned what you're, you know, talking about, I realize, you know, that. And so there are, you know, millions of people doing these programs, whether it's selling products or some kind of motivational for business, and Ray talks about this in his book, For Many Shall Come in My Name, just how the business world and the health industry and just all of it has been just overtaken by this kind of thinking.
In particular, the sales aspect of it. You know, when we think about positive mental attitude and time management, we can go back and start with Dale Carnegie and come up through Napoleon Hill and Maxwell Maltz, his Psycho-Cybernetics, the Pacific Institute. The whole thing is designed for self-programming and developing this system, but unfortunately...
Well, we're going to have to let you go, but you're absolutely right. All of these lead us away from our Creator, our Lord. Good night. Thanks so much. It's a good point. And Deborah, the hour has flown by. I want to thank you so very much for being with us again.
Well, thank you very much, Dan.
And so our guest has been Deborah Dombrowski, and we're talking about The Secret. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Deborah, thank you so very much for hanging on with us for the hour. And I think it's fascinating information, and I think it's so vitally important that Christians are warned away from this. Anyway, of course, we have actually a 4-tape set with another previous interview with Deborah. It's called The Secret Behind the Secret. You can get a 4-tape set or a 4-CD set on that subject. And then, of course, it's very, very important that you understand the background behind this. We carry Ray Young's book, Time of Departing, For Many Shall Come in My Name, where he touches on the secret, and we need a great deal more in the way of information that you can get to others. But remember what the secret really is. You are God. You are a creator, and, of course, that is the antithesis of Christianity, because if you are the creator, you don't need a God. And if you don't need a God, if you are God yourself, then, of course, where does this power come from? The secret that has been passed down through the ages is that there are not one God, but two gods. There's the God that the Christian worships, and then there's a real God, the smart God. His name is Lucifer. And, of course, this is what they could never admit, is that these people all look to Lucifer as the source of their power and their strength. And when you understand that this is Luciferian, this was the secret of the Rosicrucians, of the Illuminati, of Masonry, of certainly of the Knights Templar, of the Gnostics, and you go back and read about Gnosticism, it was a worship of Lucifer. And this is what is being practiced all across America today. And we have to ask ourselves, why at this time in history is this sweeping not only America, but the entire civilized world? Well, I think that we're in very real problems. I believe that this is a very important time in history, and we do hope that many of you want to get my talk on the forbidden secret. That's the forbidden secret. My talk, and these are available on DVD or VHS. Then, of course, my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness. The DVD put out by Chris Pinto, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, which takes you into the Rosicrucians. The second of the series, the DVD entitled The Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. These are very professionally done DVDs. Mine or simply me talking, but the ones by Chris Pinto, The Secret Mysteries and Riddles in Stone, very professionally done. You need to help us get this information out across America. If I could suggest our 3-pamphlet set, The Occult Hierarchy, that's certainly very inexpensive. The Occult Hierarchy, about 15 of my newsletters and some of the writings of Dr. Dennis Cuddy, that will introduce you to the other world. And there is another world. There is a spirit world out there, and you better understand that. There is supernatural power that you can tap into, but, of course, at the risk of eternal damnation. So begin to get an education. Certainly our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Let me recommend the information that will come from Lighthouse Trails. Let me recommend the things we've talked about. the four tape or four CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, then my talk on Forbidden Secret, then Ray Young's book, For Many Shall Come in My Name, and A Time of Departing, and then, of course, Chris Pinto's wonderful DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone. And this will introduce you to the other dimension. There really are people out there, ladies and gentlemen, who worship Lucifer today. And some of them have been very well rewarded financially with positions of power and wealth. But, of course, at what price? And remember, you can't take it with you. You want to know where you're going to be going. And, of course, this is why I hope if you do not have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, you'll ask him into your life today.